We present Watto Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. Starring Michael Horden as Jeeves, Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster, and James Villiers as Esmond Haddock. From the book, The Mating Season, Episode 5, Reunited Hearts.
If you've been following this narrative of mine with anything like the proper care, you'll be aware that on the evening of the King's Deverell Village concert, Deverell Hall was more or less bursting at the seams with tangled love lives and sundered hearts. First, the young squire, Esmond Haddock, had been given the brusheroo by the vicar's niece, Corky Purbright, on account of his habit of crawling to his aunt's. And then Queenie, the parlourmaid, had handed Police Constable Dobbs the mitten because she didn't like him being an atheist. Shortly afterwards, Gussie Finknottle had become so infatuated with Corky that he'd written to Madeline Bassett, cancelling their wedding arrangements. And scarcely had I returned from Wimbledon Common, having intercepted and destroyed that letter, than Catsmeat, Corky's brother, who had gained admission to the hall as my valet, Meadows, dished his plans to elope with Esmond's cousin, Gertrude, by inadvertently getting engaged to Queenie in the servants' hall. Add to all this the fact that for various complex reasons, Gussie and I had changed places, Gussie purporting to be Bertram, and vice versa, if you see what I mean. And you will readily understand why, on several occasions during my sojourn, the fine spirit of the Woosters had come within a toucher of being crushed. This eventually happened halfway through the village concert. If you were with me at the end of the previous spasm, you'll recall that just as I was about to enter the Goose and Cowslip, Gussie Finknottle, still clad in the check suit and green beard he had donned for the knockabout crosstalk act, beetled up and informed me that he was going to break into Constable Dobbs's police station to rescue Corky's dog, Sam Gowen. Well, at these frightful words, the fine S of the Woosters felt not just crushed, but as if it had been sat on by an elephant. And not one of your streamlined, schoolgirl-figured elephants, either. A big, fat one.
Gussie, you mustn't.
What do you mean, I mustn't? Of course I must. I told you this morning, Dobbs had established that Sam has exceeded his regulation one bite. The animal is in a very serious position legally, Bertie. He must be saved. Corky wishes it.
But don't you realize the peril?
What peril?
Well, Dobbs is waiting for you. Esmond Haddock is waiting for you. Both of them just waiting to spring.
How do you know that?
Esmond told me so himself this morning. He dislikes you intensely, and it is his dearest hope someday to catch you bending and put you behind bars. And he's a J.P., and so he's in a strong position to bring about the happy ending. Gussie, he said, addressing me, you understand, if Worcester, meaning you, Gussie, comes up before me, I shall give him 30 days without the option, regardless of his age or sex.
For Corky's sake, I'd do a year. Besides, Bertie, I don't know what you mean by saying Haddock and Dobbs are waiting for me. They're both at the concert. Haddock is still on stage singing that appalling hunting song of his. And Dobbs is watching from the front row.
You're sure of that? About Dobbs, I mean?
I saw him myself from the platform while we were doing our crosstalk act.
You couldn't have been mistaken.
My dear Bertie, there's no mistaking a face like Dobbs's. It looks as if it's been carved out of some hard kind of wood by a sculptor who studied at a correspondence school and got to about lesson 3.
True, true, but all the same, Gussie, is this expedition wise? I mean to say...
Bertie, Corky wants me to extract her dog. And I'm going to do it. Gussie, she said to me, you're such a help. I intend to be worthy of those words. Well, cheerio, old man.
But Gussie, oh, cheerio, dash it. Golly. Jeeves, is that you?
Precisely, sir.
Where have you been?
If you recollect, sir, you dispatched me a few minutes ago to seek an interview with Mr. Esmond Haddock, in order to request him to deputize for you in the matter of the recitation of the Christopher Robin poems at the concert.
Of course. Forget my own name next. Well, how did you get on?
Everything has been satisfactorily arranged, sir. I saw Mr. Haddock as soon as he left the stage at the intermission, and as I anticipated, he is more than willing to take your place. The reception accorded to the young gentleman's hunting song has made him eager to appear before the audience a further time, sir.
Then go God bless Mr. Haddock, Jeeves. In fact, hooray! There's splendid stuff in these young landowners, is there not?
Unquestionably, sir.
The backbone of the country, I sometimes call them.
Exactly, sir. Incidentally, sir, you recall that you requested me this morning to get in touch with your cousin, Master Thomas, and obtain from him his small but serviceable rubber bludgeon.
Relieve him of his cough, you mean?
Yes. I am happy to inform you that I have been successful in that endeavor also. I have the weapon in my pocket.
Excellent, Chief. Why mention it now?
Merely, sir, that I have just been conversing with Constable Dobbs, Master Thomas's intended victim. Constable Dobbs was speaking in disparaging terms of the quality of the entertainment provided, and in doing so remarked that some of the turns, in particular Master George Kegley Bassington's inadequate attempt to recite Ben Battle, had given him a headache.
So Dobbs isn't enjoying the concert?
No, sir. The officer was almost equally caustic with regard to Miss Muriel Kegley Bassington's rendition of My Hero, and informed me that in order to avoid witnessing the efforts of Colonel and Mrs. Kegley Bassington, Master Percival Kegley Bassington, Master Watkin Kegley Bassington, and Miss Poppy Kegley Bassington, all of which are scheduled for the second half of the entertainment, sir, he intended to return to his cottage and there to pass what is left of evening with a pipe and the works of Colonel Robert G. Ingersoll, the eminent free thinker, sir.
Jeeves, you didn't really say that, did you?
Sir?
About Constable Dobbs going back to his cottage.
Oh, yes, sir. The officer informed me that it was his intention to do so. He said he desired solitude.
Solitude? Jeeves, to give you the situation in what is sometimes called a nutshell, Mr. Finknottle has just left me, also with the intent of repairing to Dobbs's cottage.
Indeed, sir?
Yes. And do you know what he plans to do when he gets there? Spring Miss Purbright's dog.
I see, sir.
Quite. Not that it matters, for nothing matters now. But I wonder if you've spotted how extraordinarily closely the present setup resembles that of Alfred Lord Tennyson's well-known poem, The Charge of the Light Brigade. I mean to say, someone has blundered, and Gussie, like the 600, is riding into the Valley of Death. His not to reason why, his but to do...
Pardon me, sir, for interrupting you.
Not at all, Jeeves, I've nearly finished.
But would it not be advisable to take some form of action?
Action, Jeeves, action? How can that help us now? And what form of it would you suggest? I should have said the thing had got beyond the scope of human power.
It might be possible to overtake Mr. Finknottle, sir, and apprise him of his peril.
Well, we can try, if you like, yes. I see little percentage in it, but I suppose one should leave no stone unturned.
No, sir.
Well, shift ho for Shay Dobbs, then.
Precisely, sir. This way.
Righto. I would say this was the end, wouldn't you?
While there is life, there is hope.
Well, neatly put, but I disagree with you. I see no reason for even two pennyworth of hope. We shan't overtake Gussie. He must have got there long ago. About now, Dobbs is sitting on his chest and slipping the handcuffs on him.
The officer may not have proceeded directly to his home, sir.
You think there's a possibility that he paused at a pub for a gargle? It may be so, of course, but I am not sanguine. It would mean that fate was handing out lucky breaks, and my experience of fate... But... Hello, who's that?
Yoo-hoo, Bertie! Hiya, Jeeves.
Good evening, miss. Miss Purbright.
Quite. Hello, Corky. Waiting for Gussie?
Yes, he went by just now.
I suppose you know you have lured him on to a doom so hideous that contemplating it the brain reels.
What on earth do you mean?
Simply this, young C. Purbright. When Gussie reaches journey's end, he will find Dobbs there reading Robert G. Ingersoll and boning up on his atheism. How long the officer will continue reading Ingersoll R.G. after discovering that Finknottle A. has broken in and is de-dogging the premises, one cannot say, of course.
Bertie, don't be an ass. Dobbs is at the concert.
He was at the concert, yes, but he left early.
Sam, that's Sam. Oh, Bertie, what a chump you are pulling a girl's leg and trying to scare her stiff. Everything's gone according to plan. Here comes Sam. I'd know his voice anywhere. Attaboy, Sam, this way. Come to mother. Inside. Quiet, boy, quiet. Right-ho, Bertie, time to be leaving. The quick fade-out is what the director would suggest here, I think. I'll be seeing you at the hall later. Uncle Sidney's been asked to look in for coffee and sandwiches after the show. And though I wasn't included in the invitation, I shall assume I was. Cheer-ho, Bertie.
Goodbye. Well, Jeeves.
Yes,
Women.
Precisely, sir.
Hello. Who's that?
Sir?
That distant running figure.
Yes, sir.
Or rather, those two distant running figures. Oh, golly. Oh, no.
Don't say it.
I fear the worst, sir.
So do I. And here it comes, Jeeves. Look.
Yes, sir. I suggest we withdraw under this tree, sir.
Good thinking, Jeeves.
I think all may yet be well, sir. Mr. Finkbottle appears not only to hold a considerable lead over the officer, but to be increasing it steadily.
I say, yes, you're right, Jeeves. He's going like a jackrabbit across the western prairie. Look at his green beard floating in the breeze. And his ankle works good, too.
The young gentleman is undoubtedly outdistancing Constable Dobbs, sir.
But, Jeeves, look. He's coming over here. What the devil's he up to?
I regret to say, sir, that Mr. Finknottle appears to have abandoned the possibility of escaping on foot in favor of concealing himself in the branches of this tree. We had better retire further back, sir.
Right. The fathead. Where do you think that's going to get him?
I could not say, sir.
Nor I, Jeeves. Only his diseased mind knows the answer to that one. Oh, the fathead. Ernest Dobbs may not be one of Hampshire's brightest thinkers, but he is smart enough to stand under a tree.
Here is the officer now, sir.
All right, you. It's a fair cop. Come down, Mr. Wooster. Come along down.
Jeeves, I can't watch this. I shall close my eyes. Tell me when the painful scene is over.
Very good, sir.
Ah! What was that? Good Lord, Jeeves, what's happened? What's Dobbs doing down there?
I took the liberty of coshing the officer, sir.
What?
Yes, sir. I considered it advisable in the circumstances as the simplest method of avoiding unpleasantness. You will find it safe to descend now, Mr. Finknottle, sir.
Dave?
Come down, Gussie, you chump.
What? Oh, right-o. I don't quite...
If I might offer the suggestion, sir, speed is of the essence. One cannot guarantee that the constable will remain indefinitely immobile.
You don't mean he'll recover?
Yes, sir, almost immediately.
I'd have said all he wanted was a lily in the right hand and he'd be set.
Oh, no, sir, the cosh produces merely a passing malaise. I anticipate that Dobbs, on coming to his senses, will experience a headache somewhat more severe than that from which he was suffering earlier, but...
Into each life some rain must fall?
Yeah, precisely, sir.
No.
Oh, Gussie is amongst us once again.
Hey, what?
Yeah, I think it would be prudent also, sir, if I may say so, for Mr. Finknottle to remove his green beard. It presents too striking a means of identification.
But he can't. It's stuck on with spirit gum.
If Mr. Finknottle will permit me to escort him to his room, sir, I shall be able to adjust that without difficulty.
You will? Right-ho, then. Get going, Gussie.
Hey.
Push off.
Hey, what?
Jeeves.
Sir?
Remove him.
Very good.
It was with mixed feelings that I returned to the hall and dug in my room, for I had, it will come as no surprise to you, much food for thought. The revelation of this deeper, coshing side to Jeeves's character had come as something of a shock to me, and I found myself wondering how far the thing would spread. It was a disquieting thought that in the heat of an argument about, say, soft-bosom shirts for evening wear, he might forget the decencies of debate and elect to apply the closure by hauling off and socking me on the frontal bone with something solid. One could but trust that the feudal spirit would serve to keep the impulse in check. I was still trying to adjust the faculties to the idea that I'd been nursing in my bosom all these years someone who would be gratefully accepted as a muscle guy by any gang on the lookout for new blood, when Gussie tooled in, minus the shrubbery. He, too, appeared to have something on his mind.
Bertie.
Yes, old man?
Bertie, do you know what it is to have the scales fall from your eyes?
Oh, yes. A frequent occurrence with me, old man.
They've fallen from mine now. And I'll tell you the exact moment it happened. It was when I was up in the tree gazing down at Constable Dobbs and hearing him describe the situation as a fair cop. That was when the scales fell.
Half a second, Gussie, just to keep the record straight. What are you talking about?
I'm telling you. The scales fell from my eyes. Something happened to me. In a flash, with no warning, love died.
Whose love?
Mine, you ass, but corky. I felt that a girl who could subject a man to such an ordeal was not the wife for me. Mind you, I still admire her enormously, and I think she would make an excellent helpmeet for somebody of the Ernest Hemingway type who likes living dangerously. But what I require as a life partner is someone slightly less impulsive.
Whoopee!
How Don't yell whoopee like that, Bertie. You made me bite my tongue.
I'm sorry, Gussie, but I stick to it. I said whoopee and I meant whoopee. And if I yelled it, it was merely because I was deeply stirred. I don't mind telling you now that I have viewed your passion for young Corky with concern, pursing the lips and asking myself dubiously if you were on the right lines. I've always thought that the girl for you was Madeline Bassett, and I'm delighted you now intend to go back to her and live happily ever after. It will be a genuine pleasure to me to weigh in with a silver egg boiler or whatever you may suggest as a wedding gift, and during the ceremony you can rely on me to be in a ringside pew singing, "Now the labourer's task is o'er like nobody's business." Why are you writhing?
Well, wouldn't anybody writhe who've got themselves into the jam I have? You're talking rot, Bertie.
Rot?
Yes, about going back to Madeline. How can I go back to Madeline, dearly as I should like to, after writing her that letter yesterday, telling her it was all off?
Ah, that letter, yes. Gussie, all is well. No need for concern. Others have worked while you slept. Madeline didn't receive that letter.
What? Why not? How do you know? What are you talking about?
Listen, briefly, I travelled down to Wimbledon Common last night on the milk train, and this morning parked myself in a bush just outside the dining room window of the Larches.
That's it.
Let me finish. As soon as the housemaid had deposited your missive on Madeline's breakfast plate and left the room, I swooped on it like the Assyrian, who, you may remember, came down like the wolf on the fold, trousered it, and later consigned it to the flames of the very fireplace in front of which you are now standing.
Bertie, thank you.
Not at all, Elvie.
As a general rule, I yield to none in considering you the world's premier half-wit, but you seem on this occasion to have displayed resource, enterprise, and an almost human intelligence.
That's very handsome of you.
You saved my life, Bertie.
Quite all right, old man.
But for you...
Don't mention it. Just the Worcester service.
I say, I think I'll pop off and see Madeline straight away. I'll get my car and drive to Wimbledon.
A good scheme, but won't she be in bed?
Then I'll sleep in London and go out there first thing in the morning.
A wise move.
Excuse me, sir.
Not at all, Jeeves. Come in.
I'm just going, Jeeves. Oh, I say, could you pack up my things and send them on for me? I'm buzzing up to London right away in order to call on Miss Bassett early tomorrow morning.
Certainly, sir.
Oh, thanks a lot. Righto then, Bertie. Thanks again for everything. Cheerio.
Cheerio, Gussie. Did you grasp the gist of that, Jeeves?
If I understood Mr. Fignottle correctly, sir, he wishes me to pack his things and send them on for him as he is proceeding to London at once in order to call on Miss Bassett early tomorrow morning, sir.
Oh, correct. But did you gather the reasoning behind this sudden exit, Jeeves?
Yes, sir. Mr. Fignottle was good enough to confide in me. And I must confess I had rather anticipated some such contingency. Mr. Fignottle is of the quiet, domestic type that enjoys a calm, regular life, while Miss Pirbright is perhaps somewhat...
More than somewhat, Jeeves. Considerably more. However, all that is behind him now, and I must say I'm delighted the way things have panned out.
Most gratifying, sir.
Most. If only one felt that fate was going to do the square thing on all the other fronts.
Sir?
Well, the tangled love lives of Catsmeet, Gertrude Winkworth, Queenie, Officer Dobbs, Corky, and Esmond Haddock.
Yes.
As regards the last name, of course, we'll have to wait and see whether your Clark scheme has brought home the bacon. Esmond will certainly cheer to the rafters tonight, but the question remains whether he's got it up the nose enough to look his aunts in the eye and make them wilt. You remember, Corky refuses to have him back until he stands up to Dame Daphne Winkworth and the Mrs. Charlotte, Emmeline, Harriet, and Myrtle Devereux.
Exactly, sir. If you will excuse me now, sir, I fear I must be leaving you. I promised to help my Uncle Charlie serve the refreshments in the drawing room.
Oh, the coffee and sandwiches? Scarcely your job, Jeeves, surely.
No, sir. But one is glad to stretch a point to oblige a relative.
Blood is thicker than water, you mean?
Precisely, sir.
Righto then, Jeeves. Off you go. And I must get dressed for this bin.
Very good.
Hello.
Mr. Haddock, I believe, sir.
Thank you, Jeeves.
Pull up your fox and chase the fox and lay the blight below. Hearken to the merry horn, oh, the breaker, oh, the baller. Right, although our bags get torn. What-ho, what-ho, what-ho.
Hello, Esmond.
Hello, Gussie, what-ho.
Gussie. Take a seat, old man. I'm just dressing.
Take a seat?
Yes.
You don't seriously think that on this night of nights I can sit down, do you, Gussie? I don't suppose I shall sit down again for months and months and months. It's only by the exercise of the greatest willpower that I'm keeping myself from floating up to the ceiling. Yoicks, hark forward, tally-ho, tally-ho. Hello. A hunting we will go, my lads.
Yes, you certainly wowed them tonight, Esmond. I don't wonder you're bucked.
My good Gussie, you don't think I'm floating about like this just because my song got over?
Aren't you?
Certainly not.
Then why do you float?
Because of Corky, of course. Good Lord, I haven't told you, have I? Let me tell you the whole story. do. I wonder, Gussie, if you remember a conversation we had the first night that you were here. To refresh your memory, it was the last time we were allowed to get at the port. The occasion when you touched up that lyric of my Aunt Charlotte's in such a masterly way. Strengthening the weak spots and making it box office. If you recall.
I recall, yes.
In the course of that conversation, I told you that Corky had given me the brusheroo. If you recollect.
Yes, I recollect.
Well, tonight, you know, Gussie, it's the most extraordinary sensation swaying a vast audience.
Would you call it a vast audience?
Well, the 2 bob, shilling, and 8p seats were all sold out, and there must have been fully 50 standees at the back. Still, call it a fair vast audience, if you prefer. It's the most extraordinary sensation swaying a fairly vast audience. It makes you feel you're a pretty hot number and that you're not going to stand any nonsense from anyone. And under the head of nonsense, you find yourself classing girls giving you the brusheroo. I mentioned this so that you'll be able to understand what follows.
Well, I think I know what follows, Esmond. You got hold of Corky and took a strong line.
Why, yes. As a matter of fact, that was what I was leading up to. How did you guess?
I foresaw what would happen if you slew that fairy vast audience. I knew you were one of those birds on whom popular acclamation has sensational effects. Yours has been a repressed life, Esmond, and you have no doubt a marked inferiority complex. The cheers of the multitude frequently act like a powerful drug upon bimbos with inferiority complexes.
Golly, you're a deep thinker, Gussie.
With the cheers of the multitude ringing in your ears, you came off that platform a changed man full of yeast and breathing flame through the nostrils. You found Corky, you backed her into a corner. You pulled the dominant male on her and fixed everything up, right?
Yes. That was just what happened. Amazing how you got it all taped out.
Oh, well, one studies the psychology of the individual, you know.
Only I didn't back her into a corner. She was in her car, just driving off somewhere, and I shoved my head in at the window.
And?
Oh, we kiddied back and forth. I told her she was the lodestar of my life and all that sort of thing, adding that I intended to have no more rot about her not marrying me. And after a bit of pressing, she came clean and admitted that I was the tree on which the fruit of her life hung.
I say, really? Nice work, Esmond. Then everything's all right.
Yes, everything's fine. Well, except for one small detail.
And what is that in round numbers?
Well, it's a thing I don't know if you will quite understand, Gussie. To make it clear, I shall have to go back to the time when we were engaged before. She severed relations then because she considered that I was a bit too much under the domination of my aunts, and she didn't like it.
Oh, really?
Yes, and unfortunately she hasn't changed her mind. Nothing doing in the orange blossom and wedding cake line, she says, until I have defied my aunts.
Well, go ahead, defy them.
Oh, it's all very well to say that, Gussie, but it's a thing that presents all sorts of technical difficulties. You can't just walk up to an aunt and say, I defy you. You need a cue of some sort, and I'm dashed if I know how to set about it.
I'll tell you what. It seems to me that here is a matter on which you would do well to seek advice from Jeeves.
Jeeves?
My man.
I thought your man's name was Meadows.
It is. Slip of the tongue. I meant to say Worcester's man. He's a bird of extraordinary sagacity and never fails to deliver the goods.
Doesn't one rather want to keep visiting valets out of this?
Not when they're Jeeves, no. You see, if you didn't live all the year round in this rural morgue, you'd know that Jeeves isn't so much a valet as a Mayfair consultant. The highest in the land bring their problems to him. I shouldn't wonder if they didn't give him jeweled snuff boxes.
And do you think he would have something to suggest?
He always has something to suggest.
Well, then where is the blighter?
He's gone to help his Uncle Charlie, your butler, silversmith, push the sandwiches round to the drawing room.
Golly, that's where we ought to be too, my lad. We're a bit late. Come on, let's go and find him. Are you ready?
Ready, yes.
Then let's go. Hello, 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 hello. Oh, hunting we will go, my lad. Hunting we will go.
Good night, sir. Good night, madam.
Good night,
silversmith.
Good night.
We're right over our bag at all. What ho,
silversmith? Showing out some guests, what?
Yes, sir. Colonel and Mrs. Kegley Bassington and family.
Hallelujah. Smooth work missing those steps, Gussie. What England needs is fewer and better Kegley Bassingtons. You agree with Miss Silversmith?
I fear I've not formulated an opinion on the subject, sir.
Silversmith, you are a pompous old ass. Come along, Gussie. Let's join the throng. Yoicks, tally-ho! Hello, 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 hello. Auntie Weasel. Oh, Aunt Daphne, hello. And where are you off to?
I am going to bed. I have a severe headache. Why are you so late, Esmond?
Well, if you ask me, I'd say it was because I didn't arrive sooner.
Colonel and Mrs. Kegley Bassington were most surprised. They could not understand why you were not here.
Then they must be the most priceless fatheads. You'd think a child would have realized that the solution was that I was somewhere else.
Esmond!
Good night, Aunt Daphne. Come along, Gussie. Let's get at those sandwiches. Hello, 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 hello. I say, Gussie, quite a good crowd here.
Pretty full, yes.
Four aunts, my cousin Gertrude, the vicar. I say, who is that red-haired stripling with Corky?
Oh, that's my Worcester's young cousin Thomas. He's staying at the vicarage.
Here's Queenie with the sandwiches. Good evening, Queenie.
Good evening, sir. Sardine, ham, tongue, cucumber, or potted meat.
Well, they all look good to me. Get digging in, Gussie.
Thanks.
Coffee, sir?
Oh, Jeeves. Esmond, this is Jeeves.
Oh, Jeeves. You're Jeeves, are you? Well, I'd like a word with you, Jeeves, sometime.
Very good, sir.
Not now, later on. Silversmith looking important. Yes, Silversmith?
Constable Dobbs, sir.
Golly, Jeeves.
Yes, sir.
Well, well, well. Hello, 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 hello. Evening, Dobbs. And what brings you here?
Evening, sir. I've come on an unpleasant errand, I'm afraid, sir.
Jeeves, do you think...
I very much fear so, sir.
Well, come on, Dobbs, what is it? Out with it, man.
Well, sir, I wonder, sir, if before going into the matter further, sir, I might have a word with a vicar, Mr. Purbright, sir, on a spiritual subject.
Go ahead.
What is it, Dobbs?
Well, sir, it's with reference to my having seen the light.
Ernie!
You've seen the light, Dobbs.
Arr, and I'll tell you how it come about, sir. On the evening of the 23rd inst, well, tonight, as a matter of fact, I was proceeding about my duties, chasing a marauder up a tree, when I was unexpectedly struck by a thunderbolt.
A thunderbolt?
Thunderbolt, Dobbs?
What did he say?
The officer says he was struck by a thunderbolt, Charlotte.
Oh, very nice, too.
Most extraordinary.
Yes, sir. Well, sir, I'm no fool. I can take a hint. If it's got as far as thunderbolts, Dobbs, I said to myself, it's time you made a drastic revision of your spiritual outlook, Dobbs, I said to myself. So if you follow my meaning, sir, I've seen the light. And what I wanted to ask you, sir, was... Do I have to join the infants' Bible class, or can I start singing in the choir right away?
Dobbs, I can hardly say how delighted I am that this has come to pass. It behooves us all.
That is Queenie, Jeeves, is it not, sobbing on Dobbs's chest?
Yes.
It looks to me, Jeeves, as if tortured souls preferred have taken another upward trend, and one can chalk up on the slate two more sundered hearts reunited in the springtime, what?
Certainly, sir. And if I may say so, sir, this rapprochement is doubly welcome, cancelling, as it does, Mr. Purbright's honourable obligations towards Queen.
Of course, yes, cats meets free again, isn't he? No wonder Gertrude Winkworth's cheered up a bit. Hello. Silversmith's putting a quick, stern farber.
Queenie! Come along, my dear. None of that in here. Come along now.
Dad, Ernie's seen the light. He's seen the light. Oh, no, Dad.
Come along, my girl.
I'm sorry about that, Mr. Purbright, sir. Sorry, very sorry indeed. I got carried away like...
I quite understand, Dobbs. Please don't apologize. But perhaps it would be better if you came to see me tomorrow. We could have a long talk about everything then, eh?
Oh, very good, sir. Yes, very good. In that case, sir, Mr. Haddock, sir, I regret that I must move on to the main purpose of my visit, which is an official one, sir.
Ah, yes, Dobbs. When you say official, you mean you wish to consult me in my capacity as Justice of the Peace?
Yes, sir.
Have a sardine sandwich, then.
No, sir, I thank you.
Well, I don't insist on sardine. How about ham, tongue, cucumber, or potted meat?
Oh, thank you, sir, but again, no. On account of the unpleasant errand I have come on, sir, as I mentioned before. I'm looking for Mr. Worcester, sir.
Worcester, eh? Worcester, eh? Excellent. What has he been doing?
Effecting burglarious entries, sir.
Has he, by Joe? Has he?
Yes, sir. On the 23rd... this evening, sir, a burglarious entry was effected by the accused in my police station and certain property of the Crown abstracted, to wit, one dog. I copped him in the very act, sir.
You actually found him abstracting this, to wit, one dog?
Yes, sir. In the act of unloosing it and encouraging it to buzz off. He proceeded to buzz off, and I proceeded to say, ho. Whereupon, he also proceeded to buzz off with me after him, like a split. I proceeded to pursue him up a tree and was about to effect an arrest when along come this here thunderbolt depriving me of my senses. When I come to you, the accused had departed.
And what makes you think it was Worcester?
He was wearing a green beard, sir, and a check suit. This rendered him conspicuous.
Yes, I see. He had not changed after the performance.
No, sir.
Capital. Topping. Then, the first thing to do, I should say, is to find Worcester. Has anybody seen him?
Not since the concert. What did he say?
Excuse me, sir. I have some knowledge of the gentleman's whereabouts. Mr. Worcester has gone to London in his car.
Fleeing from justice, eh?
No, sir. Might I make a remark, sir?
Carry on, please.
Thank you, sir. I merely wish to say that the officer is mistaken in supposing the miscreant responsible for the outrage was Mr. Worcester. I was continuously in Mr. Worcester's society from the time he left the concert hall. I accompanied him to his room, and we remained together until he took his departure for London. I was assisting to remove his beard, sir.
You mean you give him an alibi?
A complete alibi, sir.
Damn. Well, officer,
if it wasn't the accused Worcester, then it must have been the other chap. The other one in the crosstalk act, sir. The one who was playing Mike. He was wearing a green beard, too. Meadows is his name. Mr. Finknall's man is.
Oh, golly, cat's meat. Jeeves, you're throwing cat's meat to the wolves. Look at poor Gertrude Winkworth.
No, sir.
Jeeves.
Oh, sir.
Bring Meadows here at once.
Very good, sir.
Stop. Who do you say this man is?
Mr. Finknall's man, Miss Harriet.
Why was he stealing a dog from you?
I had arrested the dog, Miss Emmeline, for biting. The first bite was effected here on these very premises, you may remember.
What's he saying, Myrtle?
The officer says the dog bit someone here, Charlotte. Whom did the creature bite, Doctor?
Silversmith, madam.
Do you mean that the dog in question is that vicious animal who ran amok in here last Friday?
Oh, yes, madam.
Good heavens. Esmond, I hope you will send this man to prison for a very long time.
Yes, Esmond, be severe.
Can't he have a whipping, too? Nothing like a good whipping.
Meadows, sir.
Ah, are you Meadows?
Yes, sir. You wish to speak to me, sir?
I not only wish to speak to you, Meadows, I wish to give you 30 days without the option.
Oh, 30 days?
How much?
30 days, dear.
Is that all?
I beg your pardon, sir. I don't quite understand.
You don't? Then let me ask you a few questions, Meadows. You sustained the role of Mike in the Pat and Mike entertainment this evening.
Yes, sir, I did.
You wore a green beard?
Yes, sir.
And a check suit?
Yes, sir.
Then you're for it.
I don't understand.
Oh, Claude.
Gertrude, what are you doing?
Gertrude, kissing the fellow.
Gertrude, stop that at once.
Hello, 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 hello.
Claude, oh, it's been so long. Esmond, don't send him to prison.
Gertrude, my own true love. It's all right, precious. It won't last long, and when I come out, we shall get married.
Married? Did you say married?
Now, wait a minute, everyone. What is all this? Gertrude, what are you doing?
Esmond?
Yes, Corky?
Let me explain. This Esmond is my brother Capsmeat.
What is?
This is.
What? That?
Yes. He came here as a valet for love of Gertrude, and a darn good third-rail situation, if you ask me.
Miss Pervlite's wrong.
Now, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Now, quiet, everyone. Let's thresh this out, shall we? This character is not Meadows?
No.
He's not a valet?
No.
But he is your brother, Catsmeat?
Yes.
Ah, now I've got it. Now it's all straight. How are you, Catsmeat?
I'm fine, Esmond.
That's good. That's splendid.
What's going on?
Just one moment, Dobbs.
Esmond, that man is kissing Gertrude. Stop him at once.
Never seen such a thing in my life. A visiting valet. Not a valet, Emmeline. The man's an actor.
An actor, Charlotte?
That's right, yes. Miss Pabry's brother is an actor.
Quite disgusting. Our father would have horsewhipped the fellow on the steps of his club.
Esmond!
Don't just stand there.
Separate them.
Quiet, all of you. Hush, please. Now, Catsmeat, you and Gertrude are going to get married, you say?
That's right, yes.
Oh, Claude, I'm so happy.
Married?
please, everybody, please. What's the procedure, Catsmeat?
I think the best scheme will be for us to nip up to London right away and put the thing through tomorrow. I've got the license already in waiting, and I see no difficulties ahead that a good registry office can't solve. Is that right, Precious?
Oh, yes, Angel.
Well, that's fine, Catsmeat. Why don't you borrow my car?
That's awfully good of you, old man.
Not at all, not a bit. Delighted to be of assistance. The car's in the...
Oi, sir! One moment, sir.
Ah, Dobbs. Yes, Dobbs. Yes, Dobbs, quite. I know what's on your mind, Dobbs. I can see what you're driving at. You very naturally wish to make a pinch. But consider, Dobbs, how slender is the evidence which you can bring forward to support your charge. You say you chased a man in a green beard and a check suit up a tree. But the visibility was very poor, and you admit yourself that you were being struck by thunderbolts all the time, which must have distracted your attention. So it is more than probable that you were mistaken. And I put it to you, Dobbs, that when you thought you saw a man in a green beard and a check suit, it may quite easily have been a clean-shaven man in something quiet and blue.
Well, sir...
I put it to you, Dobbs. You have a promising future in the police force, with an opportunity of rising to who knows what eminence someday. Your superiors, I know, are extremely pleased with you, and it would be a great pity, would it not, to prejudice all that for the sake of one paltry pinch based on inadequate evidence. I put it to you, Dobbs.
Perhaps you're right, sir.
No.
Quiet. Of course I'm right. I knew you'd see it when it was pointed out to you. We don't want any miscarriage of justice, what?
No, sir.
I should say not. If there's one thing that gives me the pip, it's a miscarriage of justice. Catsmeat, you are dismissed without a stain on your character.
That's fine.
I thought you'd be pleased. Dobbsy, I know just how you're feeling. But when you think it over, I'm sure you'll be glad you haven't been instrumental in throwing a spanner into the happiness of two young hearts in the springtime. If I were you, I'd pop off to the kitchen and have a word with Queenie. There must be much that you want to discuss.
You're right, sir. Yes. Thank you.
Righto. You pop along, then. Catsmeat. I suppose you and Gertrude don't want to hang around, spending a lot of time packing.
No, we thought we'd leg it in Stanter.
Exactly what I would suggest.
Esmond, you are behaving abominably.
Quiet, you two.
Gertrude, if you want any clothes, you can get them at my apartment. Catsmeat's got a key. Well, that's sweet of you, Corky. Not at all.
Splendid. Righto, then. Catsmeat, the quickest way to the garage is through the French windows and turn left.
Thank you, Esmond, for everything. Goodbye, all.
Bye, Gussie.
Me? Oh, yes. Cheerio, thing. All the best.
Good luck, both of you. Bye. Goodbye, Esmond. See you soon.
Cheerio, Gertrude, and good luck. So, That's that.
Stop them at once.
This has gone too far. If this is your idea of a joke...
Edmund, I think your aunts are trying to attract your attention, Angel.
Oh, yes.
Edmund, do you listen to me?
Oh, hello, Aunt Daphne. Oh,
will someone be so kind as to tell me what is the reason for this uproar? What is going on?
My daughter,
with an actor.
Edmund even lent them his car.
Oh, Esmond, is this true?
Quite true, yes, Aunt Daphne. Oh. And I really cannot have any discussion or argument about it. I acted as I deemed best, and the subject is closed. Silence, Aunt Daphne. Less of it, Aunt Emmeline. Quiet, Aunt Charlotte. Desist, Aunt Harriet. Aunt Myrtle, put a sock in it. Really, the way you're going on, one would scarcely suppose that I was the master of the house and the head of the family, and that my word was law. I don't know if you happen to know it, but in Turkey, all this insubordinate stuff, these attempts to dictate the master of the house and the head of the family would have led long before this to your being strangled with bowstrings and bunged into the Bosphorus. Aunt Daphne, you have been warned. One more yip out of you, Aunt Myrtle, and I'll stop your pocket money. Now then, let me just give you the strength of this. The reason I abetted young Gertrude in her matrimonial plans was that the man she loves is a good egg. I have this on the authority of his sister Corky, who speaks extremely well of him. And by the way, his sister Corky and I are going to be married ourselves. Correct?
In every detail.
He's going to marry Miss Arbright. Disgusting.
Come. Now then, no need to be upset about it. It won't affect you, dear old souls. You will go on living here, if you call it living, just as you've always done. All that'll happen is that you will be short one haddock. I propose to accompany my wife to Hollywood. And when she's through with our contract there, we shall set up a shack in some rural spot and grow pigs and cows and things. I think that covers everything, doesn't it, Corky?
I think it does, yes.
Righto. Then how about a short stroll in the moonlight?
Oh, lovely, Esmond, lovely.
Then let us go.
My first act on reaching the sleeping quarters a few moments later was to take pencil and paper, sit down, and make out a balance sheet. As follows. Sundered hearts, Esmond, Corky, Gussie, Madeline, Officer Dobbs, Queenie, Catsmeat, Gertrude. Reunited hearts, Esmond, Corky, Gussie, Madeline, Officer Dobbs, Queenie, Catchmeat, Gertrude. It came out exactly square. Not a single loose end left over. With a not unmanly sigh, for if there's one thing that is the dish of the decent-minded man, it is seeing misunderstandings cleared up, especially in the springtime, I laid down the writing materials and was preparing to turn in for the night when Jeeves came shimmering in. Oh, hello, Jeeves. I was rather wondering if you would show up. A big night, what?
Extremely, sir.
Gratifying, what?
Most gratifying, sir.
And as always, due to your unremitting efforts.
It's very kind of you to say so, sir.
Not at all, Jeeves. We chalk up one more of your triumphs on the slate. I will admit that for an instant during the proceedings, when you gave Gussie that alibi, I experienced a momentary doubt as to whether you were on the right lines, feeling that you were but landing cat's meat in the bouillon. But calmer reflection told me what you were up to. Well, you knew that Casmeat wouldn't be in any real peril. Esmond Haddock was not going to jug the brother of the woman he loved.
Exactly, sir.
If you can't get engaged to a girl with one hand and send her brother up for 30 days with the other.
No, sir.
Oh, it's nice to think that Esmond and Corky are now headed for the center aisle.
Yes.
Mm. Is something wrong, Jeeves?
I was thinking of Master Thomas, your cousin, sir. The announcement of Miss Pirbright's betrothal came as a severe blow.
Oh, waste no time commiserating with young Foss, Jeeves. His is a resilient nature, and the agony will pass. I see a bright future ahead of him. Rather, fairly bright. Having run away from school, he has an interview with his mother to get over first.
Yes, sir. That interview has already occurred, sir.
What do you mean?
My primary motive in intruding upon you at this late hour, sir, was to inform you that her ladyship is downstairs.
Aunt Agatha?
Yes, sir.
Downstairs?
Yes, sir, in the drawing room. Her ladyship arrived some few moments ago. It appears that Master Thomas, unwilling to occasion her anxiety on account of his sudden disappearance from school, wrote her a letter informing her that he was safe and well, and unfortunately the postmark, King's Diveril, on the envelope...
Oh, my gosh! She came racing down.
Yes, sir.
And?
A somewhat painful scene took place between mother and son, sir, in the course of which Master Thomas happened to mention that his visit to King's Diveril was arranged in the hope that her ladyship would consequently cancel hers.
And did he mention me, Jeeves?
Yes.
He blew the gaff completely?
Yes. And I was wondering whether in these circumstances you might not consider it advisable to take an immediate departure down the water pipe. I understand there is an excellent milk train at 2:54. Her ladyship is expressing a desire to see you, sir.
Jeeves, this is grave news. But it comes at a moment when I'm well fitted to receive it. I have just witnessed Esmond Haddock pound the stuffing out of 5 aunts. And I feel that after an exhibition like that, it would ill beseem a Worcester to curl up before just one. I feel strong and resolute, Jeeves. I shall now go downstairs and pull an Esmond Haddock on Aunt Agatha. And if things look like becoming too sticky, I can always borrow that cosh of yours, what?
Very good, sir.
In that episode, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horton, Bertie, Richard Bryars, Esmond Haddock, James Villers, Corky Purbright, Joe Kendall, Catsmeat Purbright, Kenneth Fortescue, Gussie Finknottle, David Valor, Dame Daphne Winkworth, Miriam Margulies, Silversmith and the Reverend Sidney Purbright, John Dunbar, P.C. Dobbs, Anthony Higginson. Other parts, Margot Boyd, Betty Cardinow, and Kate Coleridge. The episode was adapted for radio by Chris Miller from the book The Mating Season by P.G. Woodhouse.